Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. It's Thursday afternoon. Let me tell you the logistical stuff we got going on for this here pod on this here day. Joining us from Salt Lake City, where he went to cover the Cavs 76ers game on Wednesday night, wrote three stories somehow overnight, slept an hour, took a crack of dawn flight out to Salt Lake City, then had to do NBA Today, like a half hour outside of town, racing back to do this pod, is Tim Bontemps.
And I have a couple Celtics press conferences and a Sports Center hit later, so we're off and rolling here at All-Star Weekend. Lots happening.
All right, so I've done get up the last 2 days, getting up at 4:45 local time. I'm actually going to have to pause this conversation in a few minutes. I got to go do PTI, and then we'll come back. But this is one of our big straw poll podcasts. And then we have McMahon. McMahon is joining us, and I say this with love. McMahon is joining us from Bermuda, where his wonderful wife, Maria, is allowing him on his all-star break vacation. But I guess you did, McMahon, have to get up early today to fly. So, you know, we'll give you some credit.
It is a tough life. You've got PTI, I've got PTO. Bontemps is in Burr, Utah. I'm in Bermuda.
He was ready for that.
He's had all day to think about it while he's lounging in the sunshine. It's good for him.
No, I've only been here about an hour or so.
I know. It's a well-deserved break for you, buddy. Glad you're on vacation.
He's got dinner plans. Not banned from Bermuda yet.
Yeah. I've only been here for an hour.
Always available, though. Always available, though.
Hey, best ability is availability. You know me. I'm going to show up for the pod.
That's right.
As often as you'll have me. You want to do it twice a week, I'm in.
So, all right. We've got a big day today. I call it the Bontemps poll. McMahon calls it something else.
The BS poll.
the Bontemps straw poll.
That's right.
Come on.
That's right.
I got to say, mine's much catchier.
All right. So Bontemps, you did your 100 voters, 100 likely voters. You have a fresh review of where the MVP race is. Let's have it.
Yeah, I mean, by now I think everybody's seen it who's listening, so we'll skip.
I still think you should assume that. You should not assume that all of our listeners are also avid readers. So let's not assume that.
Right. Honestly, you shouldn't assume they're all literate.
I didn't know we were insulting our listeners. That's great. I didn't know we were doing that. All right, I'll rip through it then. I was trying to save us a couple minutes.
All right, well, you can save us a couple minutes. You don't have to go through.
Well, now that we've wasted a couple minutes doing this, we might as well do it. Yes, Steph Curry and Kevin Durant each got 1 fifth-place vote. We're tied for 9th. Donovan Mitchell got 3 fifth-place votes, was in 8th. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander got 4 and was in 7th. Ja Morant got 1 fourth-place vote and 5 fifth-place votes, was in 6th. Then the top 5 guys, Nikola Jokic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, Jason Tatum, and Luka Doncic, were the most concentrated top 5 in any poll I've ever done. They're on the vast majority of all ballots.
How long have you been doing it now? What's your database?
I think I've done 12 or 13 polls over 6 seasons.
Okay. And by the way, Bontemps just went 10-6 and then 1-5.
I wasn't gonna list through all the points at the top. I just was those five guys all were way ahead of everybody. Luka Doncic was 5th, 218 points, one first place vote. Jason Tatum 4th after being first last time, 410 total points.
The last poll was when, mid-December. Okay, mid-December. Tatum was in first, and even though the Celtics still have the best record in the NBA, he has gone to 4th.
Yes. Joel Embiid is 3rd, 490 total points, 6 first-place votes. Giannis Antetokounmpo 2nd, 552 total points, 11 first-place votes. And the runaway leader and now, to me, very clear favorite to win a third straight MVP award is Nikola Jokic, who had 913 total points, 77 first-place votes, one of the biggest leads we've seen in the poll, and obviously in commanding position to get another MVP award.
So I'm was the surprised.
Thing. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Wendy.
No, please.
No, I'm surprised by just how commanding of a lead that Jokic has. And he got my first-place vote, But I'm surprised, one, that Embiid is third, although, I mean, Giannis is having a great year. But I thought those two guys kind of separated themselves from the pack. So I was surprised that Embiid was third, and I was surprised that it wasn't a closer gap, considering this voting's coming pretty soon after. And, it, you know, it's one game in a full season, but it's coming pretty soon after. Embiid pretty much dominated a head-to-head matchup. And I know it was PJ Tucker guarding Jokic in the second half, but whatever. Embiid had 47 and a monster stat line outside of that in a win. So I really thought this would be closer.
I did too. I voted for Giannis with my vote. I think he's playing spectacular defense this year. Strong candidate to me for defensive player of the year. Nobody talks about him as much as they should. I voted him a couple times in years past. He just makes such a huge impact on that end of the floor. The Bucks are playing brilliantly. They're playing the Bulls tonight in Chicago. I don't know what will happen, but half of the Bulls roster is out and they're playing the second night of back-to-back. I like the Bucks' chances. We'll see Jinx and whatever of making it 13 in a row going into the break. They're right on the Celtics' heels for the best record. Giannis is putting up routine greatness. Obviously, if I'm Jokic getting first place votes, Bontemps, the guy's averaging a triple double. They got the best record in the West. He's brilliant night in and night out. I'm not debating that. I'm just saying I'm really surprised that. We talked about before the season, and maybe it was just a flawed assumption that the standard for him to win that third MVP. I mean, the story that you wrote about this, your lead of the story is Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, Larry Bird. Those are the three guys in history who have won three straight MVP awards. Obviously, LeBron's won four, Jordan's won, I think, five or six. Abdul-Jabbar.
Kareem's won six, Jordan's won five, LeBron's won four. I think Magic and Moses, they have won four.
Okay.
Or they've won so three. Obviously, yeah. Right. It's rarefied air. Rarefied air.
Right. So we thought the standard for Jokic is going to be really high. And what this poll results is showing is that he's meeting that standard. That's essentially what your story said.
Yeah. I mean, look, before the season, you know, now people ask me about MVP every year, right? They know, like, sort of associate with this poll. And they're like, hey, does Jokic have it? What does Jokic have a chance to win a third MVP in a row? Or what does he have to do to win? And I just would sort of say, well, I think it's going to be hard, but he could lead Denver to the best record in the West or the best record in the league, and he could average a triple-double. And if he does that, he's going to have a good chance to win. And that is exactly what has happened. So I certainly think he has met the standard. I, like you guys, was surprised at the spread. I thought Joel would get more votes. I thought that Giannis would get more votes. I'm not surprised that Jason Tatum is fourth. We talked about in the first straw poll, he had a very soft lead. They had the best record in the league. They had the greatest offense of all time. He was easily the dominant player on the team, and he didn't even have half the first place votes in that poll. It felt like somebody else was going to surpass him. I'm not surprised those three guys did. I am surprised that the gap is as big as it is. And I do think, you know, we talked about this a little bit the other day, Brian. I do think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the Denver Nuggets and specifically on Nikola Jokic. If this season goes the way it does, as it stands right now, and he wins his third MVP, they go in the playoffs with the best record in the West, him win another MVP award. There's going to be as much pressure on them as any team in recent memory. Cause if they fall short, they lose in the first or second round of the playoffs, or even if they lose in the conference finals, but certainly they lose in the first or second round. That's going to have some pretty massive ramifications, I think, going forward on Jokic's reputation and on where Denver sits going forward. Because all the stuff from the last couple of years about the supporting cast being banged up and Jokic playing great and having reasons why they lost early, those are all going to be out the window. And when you put him in that rarefied air with Larry Bird, Wilt Chamberlain, and Bill Russell, he's got to back that up with success in the playoffs, particularly in a year when the Western Conference is nowhere near the level it's been in the past.
Well, I thought it was interesting when the voting came out for the Eastern Conference starters. Remember to vote the starters. The fans got 50%. The players voted and the media voted. So three of these strong candidates, three of the top four, are in the Eastern Conference front court with Giannis, Tatum, and Embiid. And the media is the one who's going to vote for the MVP. So those, even though it was a few weeks ago, it's just that it was an interesting light in the way the media is viewing them. And among those three guys, when it came to the media votes, Tatum got the most votes. Tatum was sort of one, Embiid two, and Giannis three. Giannis was two, Embiid was three.
Embiid's been on the tear since then. So is Giannis.
Well, there's a couple things. There's a couple things about that vote. So obviously, I had to hear a lot about that vote because, you know, Daryl Morey went on the radio and said that, you know, the evil media kept Joel from being the Eastern Conference starter when really it was the fans in Philly not voting enough. But that being said, all four of those guys plus Kevin, those three guys plus Kevin Durant, they were all separated by, I think, 10 or 12 votes total. It was like 68 to 81 or something. Might have been 13, somewhere around there. And all Durant, Giannis, and Embiid all were hurt within, I think, 10 days of the vote for some period of time. And Tatum wasn't. And I think that was really the only difference at that point.
The players, the three of them. On the player voting, they ranked Giannis one, Durant two. But for the sake of this, Giannis one, Embiid three, and Tatum four. So the media liked Tatum more than the players, so to speak. And so it's interesting now that just a month later, and McMahon, I think you're right. I think it's responding to how strong Embiid has been playing. He had another excellent game on Wednesday night to beat the Cavs, snap their win streak, and really put him in their place in fourth. But he's been awesome the last 3 weeks. He's now second in the league in scoring. But it's just interesting to me that it did look like the media was attracted to the Tatum story. The Jokic thing is impressive. And, you know, my thing on Jokic is I'm trying to figure out how to value these guys, because this is obviously a challenging vote. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to be third and fourth on these ballots when this is over that it could have won the MVP in other years.
Even fifth. Luka's got a hell of a case too.
I agree.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, but one of the things I'm looking at is playing both ends of the court. I know defense is completely not a factor now, but like Giannis doesn't seem to get credit for it, and Jokic doesn't seem to get really penalized for it, even though I know he's better than he used to be.
I don't think it's fair to say Jokic is a bad defender. I think that's a perception that's not the reality.
Is he a good defender?
I would say that, and I'm double checking my facts here as we speak.
I'm just going to say
the Nuggets are significantly better with him on the floor defensively.
Everything's better with him on
the floor. McMahon, this is one of those things with plus minus. The reason why they're better with him on the court is because your favorite player, DeAndre Jordan, was stepping in and playing a lot of the minutes behind him this season.
Okay. The Nuggets defensive rating with him on the floor is 110.5. In today's NBA, that is good.
I understand.
They're a really good team.
I would also say he is not a good defensive player. If you want to say he's not the worst defensive player in the league, fine. He's not good.
He's not the worst defensive player in the Nuggets starting lineup.
Well,
well, that's true.
He's not the second worst.
But I don't like going and like sort of nitpicking on that. But I just think that in this case, when it's so hard to differentiate them, like in a year where we're seeing incredible stats in general, that the triple double, while very impressive, it's not like it was when Westbrook did it.
But they're also 21-0 when he has a triple double. That's impressive.
That's a great point.
I've always talked about how there's blatant stat chasing going on, and Jokic seems immune to that. We have an exception. He blatantly chased a triple double against the Mavericks on Wednesday night. It was one of those. He had 9 assists, and Vlatko Chanchar, one of the best Slovenian players in the NBA, missed 3 pointers off the Jokic passes. Actually, I like Vlatko; he's become a pretty good role player. But he missed threes off the Jokic passes on like 2 straight possessions, and then Jokic, I think he hit Bruce Brown. Little cut dunk, and then grabs a rebound, timeout. He's coming out of the game. Luka had already checked out. So my whole thing of Jokic never chases stats, I can no longer make that claim. But 21-0 with, first of all, 21 triple doubles is ridiculous. averaging a triple double is ridiculous. Going 21-0 when he puts up a triple double.
It's compelling. I agree. It's really compelling.
And the field goal percentage for a guy who's averaging a triple double, what is it now? 62, 63? It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
his efficiency is off the charts.
Yeah, he's having a tremendous season. And that's the thing. All these guys deserve to win the award. That's the rub of it. It's not like it's this guy is not deserving or that guy is not, right. That guy's not deserving or that like Jokic, you know, isn't a deserving winner. They're all deserving winners. You could make a case for all five of these guys at the top of the poll very easily. You know, they're all tremendous players. I do think though, last year I ultimately voted for Giannis because he was the best player. When it was that close, I picked the best two-way player and picked him to win. As of today, that would be my vote again. You look at the way Milwaukee season has played out. They have not been healthy basically the entire time. They're I think a game behind Boston for the best record in the league. They're on the verge of winning 12 in a row. Giannis is the best two-way player in the league by a pretty healthy amount, in my opinion, and is driving winning. You know, and again, you can look in a lot of different directions, and I think it'll be very interesting to see how this thing shakes out. But I am curious to see if there is a little bit of backlash to the size of the lead that Jokic has. I am very curious about that over the next 6 weeks because it was a surprise to me, and I think it was a surprise to a lot of people, just anecdotally that I've talked to over the past 24 hours, that he was this far ahead. And I'll be curious to see if, you know, especially if Milwaukee keeps racking up wins, they go on a hot streak for the next month. I think Giannis in particular is going to have a very interesting case to try to take him out.
Yeah, I will say this. I think Philly has the hardest schedule left in the league.
Yeah, they have a brutal schedule coming up. Brutal.
And the story that you wrote, that published today, Embiid, his foot is a real thing. Like he was kind of grumbling about having to do the All-Star weekend just because
he's been playing through it. He's been playing through it for weeks and playing great, but playing through it consistently for weeks now.
Yeah. So that's a thing. Like, you know, you guys know how I feel about Embiid. I voted for him last year. My guess is that this is going to be a Giannis Jokic showdown. Sure Embiid.
Ooh, aggregate that. Wendy, I am off the Embiid bandwagon. There's your head. Yeah,
thank you. All right, hold on. 30-second time. I'd actually be the longer 30-second than 30 seconds. I got to go talk to Tony and Mike. Just give me a second.
Oh, wow. Ooh, time for Tony and Mike.
I'll be right back. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Okay, I'm back. Through the magic of audio engineering and editing, I'm back. Thank you for waiting. We're holding McMahon from his Bermudan spectacular evening he's got planned, so I appreciate that. Seriously.
You ought to see what Bontemps has planned in Salt Lake City.
Right. All right. So we talked a little bit about Luka. They're five games in, McMahon, in the Kyrie experience, but Luka and Kyrie have only played 58 minutes together. I think they're 2-3 since the trade. Kyrie didn't play on Wednesday night in Denver. Denver is now 27-4 on their home floor. So good luck. You know, if goes through Denver, it's going to be advantage Nuggets. I was looking at some numbers in the 58 minutes that Kyrie and Luka have played together. The team has scored 146 points. That's pretty spectacular. That's number one offense type territory. And they've given up 140. So it's plus. It's plus.
Yeah.
What do you think of what you've seen so far there?
Listen, it's obviously way too early to be jumping to any kind of conclusions. I think the biggest conclusion you can jump to is when Kyrie is available, the Mavs no longer fall off a cliff in the non-Luka minutes. And that has been their biggest problem. They have been, with Luka on the floor this season, scoring at a league best clip. Before this trade, when Luka was off the floor, they were league worst clip, right? That ain't happening anymore. Like, Kyrie is fully capable of, scoring 26 points in the fourth quarter with Luka sitting out the first 6 minutes of that quarter and just absolutely dominating the game. Or, you know, leading the Mavericks to wins in, LA against the Clippers, a win over the Kings in Sacramento, you know, two playoff teams. Where the Mavericks, it's funny, they didn't win a single game without Luka this season until that trade. Then they had the weird win in Utah where Kyrie hadn't joined the team yet. I think you had guys who had their bags packed and weren't quite sure which plane they were jumping on the Jazz at that point. That was probably a factor there.
Yeah.
But then, really impressive wins over the Clippers and Kings. Look, the offense is not going to be an issue. And, like, they'll figure the in-the-game things. It's tiny sample size. Luka took a step back that he admitted, hey, I should have gotten the ball to Kyrie there. He was cooking.
Yeah, it's not a great shot.
Yeah. And he's
it's not often you see Luka looking to pass in a last shot situation.
Well, he does actually lead the league. I think he leads the league in clutch assists this year, but that's because he has the ball in his hands all the time. But, and it was his first game back. He was clearly gassed. Kyrie been cooking. Like, Luka admitted after that game, hey, I should have gotten the ball. That's my bad, is what he said. And then the next game is like, you take it. No, you take it. No, you please. It's like they're being too nice. They're being too unselfish. And they end up coughing up a turnover down three in the final seconds. Now, look, the reason they lost that, the only reason they had any chance in that game is Kyrie went bonkers, literally the highest scoring quarter of his career. They got down 26 to the Timberwolves because these guys can't stop a freaking nosebleed.
Nope. Like,
this team's terrible defensively. Now, I have some good news. Maxi Kleber expects to be able to play after the All-Star break. Like, he expects to be able to come back, when the break ends.
Can they also clone him?
Well, I was going to say, they
need like five of Maxi to exactly. come with those two guys.
At least two. Jeez, at least two.
Right, because they need 48 minutes of them.
Right.
And you got to manage his minutes under any circumstances, but especially coming back off of a torn hamstring and surgery. But that will be a massive help. Josh Green, honestly, these last couple games, the last couple games, he stunk. And I wonder if like all the minutes have kind of hit him, but he's probably the third best player now. And
I would say remove probably. I think he's pretty clearly the third best player.
And that is both a testament to how much he has developed his progress this year and a criticism of the roster, right? I'm not going to sit here and tell you I think this team has enough to make a run through the Western Conference. What I will say is it's going to be really fun to watch. And then, hey, we'll see what happens this summer. This might be a blink and you miss it. Kyrie stint in Dallas. And, that's pretty clear. And by the way, Kyrie's saying he doesn't want to talk about that it's unwarranted distractions. He's well within his rights.
Yeah. I mean, he came to Dallas, they started when they did the trade, they're on a West Coast trip. Mm-hmm. So he had several games before he'd get there. So he came to Dallas, had his first like sort of big press conference and like asked the media, basically did not ask him about his future.
Well, we had asked him about that after his first practice. I asked him about it and he basically said, hey, no pressure. We're going to see how it goes. Neither side is pushing for an extension. It doesn't make sense for Kyrie at this point because he could only do 2 years anyways. And, this whole test drive thing for the Mavericks, whatever. And then he was asked about it again the first time he met with the Dallas media at large. And look, he has said basically what he has to say is, hey, focused on this year and then we'll see what happens this summer. And it's not like he owes anybody any sort of a commitment. The Mavericks made this trade knowing there's not going to be any sort of an immediate commitment.
And I actually respect him saying that, because if he had come out and said, oh my God, I love my rental place here, I love whatever, I want to be in Dallas for all time, none of us would have believed it, because he has no credibility. So
I would say he could film another Nike commercial, but that's not an option. But you know what I'm saying? Like this whole thing of trying to figure out where his number is going to go. I'll say this. I do think his number will be up in the AAC rafters, but that's because it was Jason Kidd's number when they won a championship.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was Jason Kidd's number. It was Isaiah Thomas's number. It was Facu Campazzo's number. There's been a lot of great point guards numbers in Mavericks history. Yeah, J. Kidd wore 5 the first time, 2 the second time, but 2 is the three he had for the title.
Wow, yeah. I guess I didn't think about that. Okay, so Bontemps, here's my thought on the Mavericks. I think they've actually got a lot of potential. They just don't have it with this roster. And so what they need to do is get a transaction cycle in this summer and see if they can tweak it. You know, they still have 2 first-round picks left they can trade. They have some interesting players in the roster. I would not trade Josh Green unless it was for a bona fide number 3 star. But Jaden Hardy is an interesting player. Mm-hmm. They could potentially sign and trade Chris Wood. You know, I'm just saying they have options this summer, as long as Kyrie resigns.
I was going to say, if there's value in a sign and trade, I think it's Kyrie's the one being signed and traded.
Mm. Well, I'm just going to say, they have Tim Hardaway, that he has some value potential. They could attach a pick to him and get something. I just don't think that they're going to be able to put their best foot forward, Bontemps, with this team. I think they're going to need for it to work for them to give this a shot. I understand that they're not married to this, but I think that there needs to be some level of commitment to give this thing a real shot.
Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, they can't guard enough to win. I mean, McMahon just laid it out, right? I looked it up while he was talking. I mean, they're 20th in defense in the 4 or 5 games they've had since Kyrie started playing for their team. That's probably about where they should be. Like, hey, they don't have it.
That's an improvement over what they were before, actually.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, they're a bottom 10 defensive team quite clearly. You know, the question is, are they 27th or are they 21st? But they're not. If they're somehow in the top half of the league with this group, then that's a huge credit to Jason Kidd and Sean Sweeney and the scheming that they're doing with those guys, because they shouldn't be able to guard somebody. I don't remember who said this, but somebody compared them to the last few days to what the Jazz have been the last couple of years without Rudy Gobert. And I think that's a pretty good comparison. Like, they don't have any perimeter athleticism on the defensive end other than Josh Green, like the Jazz had Royce O'Neal.
Reggie Bullock is still a good defender.
He's okay, but they don't have – they've got a lot of guys who are targets, and they don't have Rudy Gobert behind them to back them up. So, again, like, you're asking a whole heck of a lot of Maxi Kleber, who is a terrific player but is coming off a torn hamstring, like you said, that had surgery on it, to make up for a lot of holes. So I agree, Brian. I think there is the potential in theory of putting something together around this group, but then you're talking about – building long-term around Kyrie Irving, and that means your franchise is going to immolate in some form or fashion in the near future. It's just a matter of fact. So it's not a great situation either way.
Kevin Durant is right as we're doing this, is giving his introductory press conference in Phoenix. Our buddy Nick Friedel is there. This is what he said about the Kyrie trade request. He said, it was tough to stomach. We were finally building a culture that we always wanted. I didn't know what was going on with Kyrie and his situation with the organization. So that's interesting that he didn't know. Without him, we didn't have a clear identity. So, you know, it's interesting because it was unclear exactly how looped in Durant was. He's making it sound like he wasn't looped in. But that's who the Mavericks have to decide about. You know, it is just whether Kyrie wants to stay. It's about what the Mavericks want to offer.
Here's the thing. It might not be the Mavericks' decision to make. Like, hey, if Kyrie says, you know what, I won a championship with LeBron James, I know he wants to play with me again, that sounds good to me, I'd love to go play for the Lakers, it might not be the Mavericks' decision to make.
They traded for a guy who's an unrestricted free agent in 6 months.
Right.
That's what they did.
With no assurances. And again, if that's the way it plays out, I'm not going to criticize Kyrie Irving for that. He's under no obligation to make a commitment to Max right now.
No, you're going to criticize the team that decided to invest in Kyrie Irving once again.
Yeah, but I know how this is going to go. The way that you're going to be able to sway him is by offering more years, more money, more years.
Well, that's listen, what he said. I'm just going to cut you off right there. The idea that you know what's going to sway this guy any form.
Come on. Yeah, right. But if you put and look, the Mavericks gave it was Donnie Nelson, not Nico Harrison, but it was still Mark Cuban, and that's ultimately who makes the final decisions. He gave Kristaps Porzingis a 5-year max contract with a player option. Do you think
with an ACL?
Yeah. Do you think they're really going to play hardball with Kyrie Irving?
They can't afford to. They're pot committed. Whether they want to say they're not, they are. They you know, we've talked about it a bunch. They had maybe one swing to make. Maybe they can find a way to manufacture a second one, but this was their swing.
Their second they're going to be trying to keep them. Realistically, would be with his sign and trade, you know, with his bird rights via sign and trade. I saw.
Can I interest you in D'Angelo Russell?
No, but there was another guy on that Lakers roster that you can interest me in.
Now we're getting in the deep end of the pool. Let's be careful.
Let's not even go there. Let's not even go there right now.
I'm just saying, I saw something on Twitter today. I've had a birdie mention that as a, hey, just, you know.
No. I don't. Enjoy your vacation. Enjoy your vacation.
I'm not going to say. Okay.
The thing that, you know, Bontemps has talked about is what you guys are dancing around here is the pressure that is now on the Mavericks organization.
2023 AD. Go on.
It's almost like someone
wants to get in trouble.
He's on vacation, stirring stuff up. It's almost like McMahon is writing a book about the pressures of building around a star and trying to make it happen.
Big pressure in Dallas. Cuban is playing luxury tax this year. They were already paying the tax.
Right.
But he added what? How much was it, McMahon?
A lot. I don't know. I'm on vacation.
28 million. Anyway,
you can't do math in normal times, let alone today.
I'm no mathematician either. There's a lot of money and pressure on the line. There's a lot of pressure on the line in Phoenix now too. Like, you know, Chris Paul's you know, is ticking in terms of what he's got left. They got all those picks in there. They got to make that work. You know, I mean, I know that. You know, Steph and Clay have years left, but I don't know what's going to happen with Draymond. I don't know what's going to happen with Bob Myers. They went out and did the Gary Payton portion of the deal because they are trying like crazy to salvage it this year. They got a $370 million payroll when you include the tax.
And trading James Wiseman is a very clear sign that the whole two paths nonsense is out the window. Like they're trying to win now, which is what they needed to do. It was the right move to make, but you know, again, talk about pressure. There's a lot of pressure there on a lot of fronts.
Denver is paying the tax for the first time in 13 years, I think. You know, basically the reason they're in the tax is because they gave Michael Porter that max. But, you know, like if they have a disappointment, I don't know if the Kroenkes are going to keep that on there.
Well, and it's like we talked about at the beginning with Jokic, like, there's a huge target on his back going into these playoffs because the last couple of years he's basically gotten a free pass, and he's not going to be getting a free pass if they lose early. So there might not be a player in the league with more pressure on him to deliver in these playoffs, especially if he wins this MVP award than him.
I don't know about that. He lives in a pretty pressure-free world.
I'm not saying pressure in terms of like he's going to be thinking about it. I mean, in terms of the outside opinion of him and how it's going to be shaped. I think there's no player to me that's got a bigger impact on that in this upcoming playoffs than Nikola Jokic if Denver is healthy, because there's going to be a whole lot of people who write him off if they lose in one of the first two rounds of the playoffs and say it's a travesty that he won MVP again and that these regular season stats don't matter and that it's not how it should have gone.
You're making a good point there. He's not winning the MVP in sixth place this time. Where the postseason is whatever happens is gravy. I agree. And I think what you're dancing around here is we've talked about how there's going to be an Eastern Conference team that gets knocked out in the first round that's going to really have a a bad season on its hand, because either Philly, Milwaukee, or Boston is going home after round two.
Yeah, second round.
But
but
there's even less success. You know, there's even less opportunity for success in the West, because we didn't talk about the Clippers yet. Clippers are, they've got a even a higher payroll. They're like, something like,
well, there's obviously massive pressure on them to win too, obviously.
And there's not enough success to go around. And at the deadline, Dallas pushed in more. Phoenix pushed in more.
Phoenix pushed most.
Oh my God. I mean, you know, the thing about Phoenix, you know, I wrote the story with Ramona Shelburne about the way the trade went down. The last piece to agree to the part of the trade was Jay Crowder. The Phoenix didn't want to put Jay Crowder in the deal because they had an offer on the table from Milwaukee for 5 second-round picks. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that those second-round picks really mean anything. But my point is that Indiana went or Brooklyn went around and made the deal with Milwaukee for those five seconds, although they offloaded, they have to pay Indiana a little bit to take them. But in a way, you could say that Durant cost 4 firsts, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, and 5 second-round picks.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what they – because they could have done that deal separately if they had just held on to Jay Crowder.
And like, by the way, Bridges, it's going to be fun to see how good he is, how good he can be as the focal point of the team. Obviously, 45 last night in the Nets win. I'm not saying he's going to do that on a regular basis. But
he's going to get choices.
How good he is.
Absolutely. He's going to get every opportunity to explore the studio space on that team. They don't have anybody. He's clearly their best player. They're going to be letting him try to go. Jock Vaughn said the other day before his first game at MSG against the Knicks that they saw how he played with Devin Booker out, did some stuff to Jock Vaughn, didn't think he could do. They are going to keep trying to push him in that direction. Like you said, he's not scoring 45 every night, but they don't have a lot of guys who could score. Mikal Bridges is going to get every chance to prove he could be a 25-point-a-game player.
So what Mikal Bridges did is he went from a corner player to a wing player. You know, there are a couple of different ways you play. I mean, it's not pigeonholed, but you're either – a defensive guy, a defensive specialist who then runs to the other side and stands over there in the corner to space the floor. That's what he's done most of his career. And he's been good at it.
Well, this is his chance to prove he's Chris Middleton. That to me is what it is. Right. Can he level up to be that kind of player?
And, you know? And the difference between making $40 million like Chris Middleton and making $20 million like Mikal Bridges is whether you're a corner 3-and-D guy or you're a wing 3-and-D guy, where they can throw you the ball and let you put it on the floor and you can get your own shot. Or they can set you a screen. You can create for other people. Bridges showed that while Booker was out. And I think they do the deal for him anyway, because even as a 3-and-corner player, he was really valuable. But like, I saw this a little bit in the playoffs last year. Yeah. I thought he had this, and I didn't think he was going to be a 40-point scorer like that. But yeah, I mean, and by the way, like if Bridges goes on and becomes an all-star, like the Phoenix will feel that. Like Phoenix will feel that.
Yeah.
So I do think,
but if they win a championship, that's the bar.
That's the bar for that trade. I mean, that franchise has won a lot of games over a lot of years. They've never won a title, right? Had a ton of great teams, made the finals multiple generations, right? Back in the '70s with Barkley, obviously a couple of years ago. The one thing they've never done is win a title. You make a trade like this to win a title. If you do, you get, like you say, Brian, you win one championship. You don't have to say you're sorry. Trade's a success. They don't win a championship. Trade's probably going to be a failure. Like that's, you make a deal like that. You know, I know Zach was saying the other day on TV, it's not fair to hold that bar to people, but it's not about being fair. That's the reality of the situation. You make that trade. That's what you're trying to do.
They've got new billboards on the outside of the Footprint Center in Phoenix, and it's four players, you know, Durant, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton.
Surprises that's like, Torrey Craig.
That's our core, right? That's what they're basically announcing. So we talked about how there's a possibility of maybe trades in the future in Dallas to set this up. We'll see. By the way, Ayton's had a couple of spectacular games the last few weeks. They're playing a lot better. They've won.
He was playing great going into the trade deadline too. Speaking of Brooklyn, he had a massive game in Brooklyn to beat the Nets when Devin Booker was just coming back from his hamstring injury.
Yeah, he had a couple of 35-15 games on that road trip. So that's one thing I'll say about Phoenix. So obviously they got the major chips in the middle of this year. I'm not saying Devin Booker's going to be a bona fide all-star for the next 8 years, but he is a player that people value. And his contract is not onerous. I know that the Suns didn't see him as a max player.
You're all over the place today. You said Devin Booker. You were talking about DeAndre Ayton. Yeah. Okay.
Just to say, woo.
You're like, Devin Booker, people Devin around the league don't know if Devin Booker's going to be an all-star. I was like, okay.
thank you for saving me there.
No, it's all good. I suspected that's what you were doing. Yeah.
Thank you. DeAndre, he's been, I don't want to say he's going to be a perennial all-star, but his contract is not something the teams are afraid to take on. And that could be, you know, we'll see how this Suns rollout goes. But just because they've traded all their picks doesn't mean they've emptied what they can do. They still have some options ahead of them. Plus, I think after not paying the tax themselves for more than a decade, I think Matt Ishbia is going to pay the tax. And I think they're going to be willing to spend more money and sign more free. They won't be able to go out and, you know, big game hunt, but they can add to that. So all that's going to play out this spring. It should be interesting. All right. I don't want to hold on.
I just do want to say something real quick. You talk about all the pressure on Joker, and I understand what you're saying. He's in a very similar situation that Giannis was the year that Giannis won it, won the championship. Now, Giannis didn't end up winning his third MVP. As Bucks fans remind me, I talked about kind of the standard, the historic standard of a three-time MVP for a guy who'd never been to the finals. He didn't win the MVP, but he won the championship that year where there was all the weight on his shoulders. So I get what you're saying about Joker. Chris Paul's got an immense amount of pressure on him. Like, Chris Paul is kind of he's deeper into his career, but he's kind of at that, you know, that Dirk before the 2011 run situation where it's like it's the one thing that he has never accomplished. And he has had some epic playoff flameouts as recently as last season. Now, he doesn't have to carry the team, but they need Chris Paul to be really damn good if they're going to make a championship run. And I do think that he's got as much pressure as anybody.
All right. Fair point. I do think Bob Temps has trivia before we go. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Now it's time for a Hoop Collective trivia.
I do have trivia. We had enough to talk about last week. Ties into our final topic here. Joe Mazzulla, who today, Thursday, was named the permanent head coach of the Celtics, is obviously coaching this weekend here in Salt Lake City. Who was the last coach to go into the All-Star break as a rookie coach with the best record in the NBA?
Steve Kerr.
That is correct. Good there guess. Are two other guys. There are two other guys who have done it in the past. I gave you the easier version of the question. Do you have any idea who the other two are?
Bill Jackson.
No.
No? Oh, that's a good guess. Good guess.
Pat Riley?
Pat Riley is close. Ooh. I believe Pat Riley was on the coaching. Well, he wasn't on the coaching staff at the time, I don't believe. But
I think it was on the broadcast crew. So
it was on the broadcast crew. That's right.
Why am I blanking on the guy?
What about
name?
Lawrence Frank?
That's not Lawrence Frank. You were very close on the first answer. He's the greatest executive in the history of the sport. He was the coach.
Oh, Red Auerbach.
No.
Jerry West, greatest. You say he's the greatest
executive? One of the greatest executives, you want to say. I mean, Jerry West is in the conversation. Sure.
Okay. That's fair.
Jerry West is one of them. And then the other one is on the franchise, a franchise we talked a bunch about. I actually mentioned the star player of the team. No, not Avery Johnson.
Hmm. He did have some crazy record, though. That's not a bad guess.
He did have it. Yeah. It was a good guess. He had a great record.
And they went to the finals his first
Phoenix Suns coach.
Danny Ainge.
Not Danny Ainge. The year Charles Barkley was traded to the Suns. Paul Westfall is the answer.
Paul Westfall.
Rest in peace.
Paul Westfall. 92-93. Yes, very nice guy. But it does tee us up to talk about the Celtics here, I think, for a minute, though, and this Missoula news, which was interesting today.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Bob Temps? You're around him all the time. I kind of get it. It's kind of a time where you would make an announcement like that, but why?
Why? Why? Why would they do that?
I don't know if it makes a difference. I think he was in a strong position even from when he got the job. Brad Stevens really had a great affinity for him, but why now?
I think a lot of it is just timing, right? I mean, this is something, you know, look, the Celtics didn't let Joe Mazzulla leave to come be with Will Hardy here in Utah last summer. They didn't let him leave the prior summer when Ime took over. You know, he's clearly a guy they've been very high on. I think he was going to have, from the moment he got the job back in September, I thought it was going to be a pretty high bar for him not to be in the job long term. That being said, you get to the All-Star break, you have the best record in the league. I think it's just sort of a neat and tidy time to put him in the job and say, we're not going to get to the end of the season and deal with the playoffs and how it goes. And, you know, let's say the Celtics lose in the second round. Do you have some debate about whether you keep the guy or not? You know, I think it just, I could argue you did this 2 months ago and just get it over with then. But I think it is a sign certainly of the job Joe has done and the stability that the Celtics feel like they have. And even though they lost that game on Tuesday to the Bucks, I mean, you look at their team, they feel really well aligned across the board. Mazzulla and Jason Tatum obviously have a very good relationship. They've got the deepest roster, I think, in the NBA. They've been playing great. And, you know, it certainly sets up to me for, you know, we were talking a lot earlier about Giannis. To me, it's the Celtics, Bucks, and everybody else, both in the East and in the league.
Oh, wow, you're putting the Sixers right in the everybody else category, huh?
I need to see the Sixers do it first before I could put them in that category. We have seen this team fall flat too many times in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You personally, McMahon, have seen James Harden fall flat many times in the playoffs. They are a really good team. They've played really well. I think they're 26-7 their last 33 games. They've been on a great run over the past couple of months. Joel's playing as well as anybody on the planet. But Milwaukee has won a championship. Boston has been to the finals. Those teams have been to the conference finals over and over again. Philly's got to beat one of those teams to get to the conference finals before I could put them in that same class. Fair. And as far as these Western Conference teams, I don't think any of them are close to the Eastern Conference teams.
Let's just see how the Suns look. Because I think they're going to be very difficult to stop if they're healthy. Joel's health is, I mean, you're right about Harden. It's a very fair statement. Joel's health is everything. Joel's got to be, you know, and he's, his comments to you on the record were pretty significant. They were worrisome about his foot. I mean,
he's been dealing with it to back up a little bit. So Joel is not sure if he's going to be able to play in the All-Star game on Sunday. He's been dealing with this left foot soreness for weeks. He's been questionable for every game. He's ruled into play a half an hour before the game. It's clearly bothering him after the game. He and I have talked about it a bunch. But he's been playing every game. He's been leading these guys to win after win. He's been playing great. And the thing he has told me over and over and over again over the past few months is he wants to get through one postseason without some freak injury, getting ran into his face, having, you know, getting hit with an elbow by Pascal last year.
He had that weird landing in Washington where he hurt his knee.
He had that. He got his thumb caught on a jersey. Like, he's just had all this weird crap happen to him in the playoffs. And to your point, all he wants is to have one run through the playoffs this year with a team he thinks is good enough, where he's healthy and there's no freak issues. And I think if that happens and Philly gets where they want to go, things will be good. If that happens and they lose in the second round, you know, again, you talk about pressure, you know, these Eastern Conference teams, there's going to be pressure on them if they don't get where they want to go. And like you said, at least one of them
is not going to get as far as the conference finals, and all three of them want to win a title.
All right, McMahon's time for a Mai Tai. Bontemps, enjoy All-Star weekend. Thank you to Jackson and Bruce, our producers. We'll be talking to you. Hope everybody has a good holiday weekend. We'll be talking to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.